Open Minds Radio. This is your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I have with me my good buddy, Jason McClellan. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Alejandro, because you just said I'm your buddy. I didn't know that, so that makes me feel good. But yeah, thanks for that, man.
You didn't know that? Oh my gosh, I need to say that more often.
Well, please don't, but I appreciate that you said it once.
Oh, you little son of a... Well, let me tell people first about the guest we're going to have, and then I will berate you a little bit more, Jason.
All right, go for it, because I really like the guest today.
Yeah, our guest is Ryan Sprague, a very cool little buddy of ours who lives in Manhattan, and he's written several stories in the magazine, including the last magazine. He has an interesting story on an abduction case out there in New York. And he's also a playwright, and he's doing a play on Rendlesham Forest. And in particular, some of you may know that the third night is very controversial because one gentleman claims that extraterrestrials had landed and military people had talked to these ETs and stuff, whereas some of the witnesses say they are not aware of that and don't believe that to have happened. But, of course, it's the most interesting part of the thing, so it probably would make the best play. And so he's doing a play on this, and he's getting some interest. And so it looks like it'll actually really be produced. So that's exciting. We'll talk to him about that, stories he's written, why he got involved with all of this stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun. Ryan's a great guy. Would you call him one of your buddies, too, Jason?
Ryan is one of my buddies, absolutely.
Yeah, cool guy. Well, and... this is a little off topic, but this is kind of funny because you had gotten a T-shirt of a dog catching a UFO, kind of like a Frisbee, but it's a UFO. And Ryan, totally independent, had gotten the same T-shirt and wanted to surprise you with it and showed up at the Congress. And you both wore the T-shirt on the same day.
Yep, that was an interesting surprise. And you know what? We just rolled with it.
Yeah, that is so funny. And I think you have a picture of both of you wearing your T-shirts on your Facebook, right?
Yep, I certainly do.
So we have evidence of it. That was really weird. That was funny.
Very good evidence.
All right. So let's talk about the UFO stories of the week. What is your story, Jason?
The story of the week. Well, Alejandro, I'm going to go ahead and say that my story from last week, the one I thought was pretty interesting, the story we posted on Thursday, April 18th, about this video in Ireland showing these strange fireball UFOs in the sky, multiple fireball UFOs drifting horizontally through the sky. This is a video that was uploaded to YouTube by someone in Ireland. This is Cork, Ireland. And the video was uploaded on March 16th. And it gained a lot of attention and is still gaining a lot of attention, primarily, I think, based on a UFO research group there in Ireland that reposted the video. But the original video was uploaded on March 16th of this year. But the actual event, based on the title of this video, happened in December 2012. And in the video, we see multiple very bright objects in the sky. Like I said, drifting horizontally, slowly through the sky. And there's lots of smoke following these objects. The video is very low quality. The witness explains that he recorded it with his cell phone camera. And there's no audio on this video. It's just the video itself, no audio track, which has led some people to question and think maybe that's an indication of a hoax because the video was taken into a computer and some editing done. But the witness has been very good about responding to people's criticisms on his YouTube channel and explaining why he did certain things. And he said that you know, the video is crappy because it was a cell phone. There's no audio track because he claims there was no relevant or the things said during the video weren't relevant to what was happening, which is kind of weird. I don't know why the things being said wouldn't be relevant. I mean, you're watching these things go through the sky and you're excited about them. That's why you're recording them. But he felt the dialogue wasn't relevant, so cut that out and also trimmed off the end, I guess. So we have an interesting video here. No mention of other witnesses or anything like that or any mention in the local press. Since then, it's certainly created a lot of headlines in international media, different media outlets picking this story up and talking about the interesting video. And even author Whitley Strieber and his wife Anne posted something on their website about this and talked to several experts to get their opinions on whether or not they think this is perhaps a hoax video or we're looking at something genuine. And I'll offer out my personal opinion that based on what we see, which is very limited, and again, it's a very low-quality video, it's hard to make any concrete determination. But based on the motion of these things, their appearance, the way they're moving through the sky, and just the incredible volume of smoke that accompanies these things, it's similar to a type of flare, I think. Not the type of flare that would be dropped by military planes, but things more like fireworks launched from the ground up. They go up in the sky for a while and then slowly descend. They very much look like a fire, sort of firework type object like that. And because this video was shot in December 2012, throughout the year 2012 around the world there were various celebrations to mark the 100th anniversary of the Titanic. And in April of 2012 and December of 2012, at least those are two that I know of, in the area of Cork, Ireland, there were these celebrations taking place. And these flares, many flares were launched, and they look similar to this. I will point out, though, that the flares in this video are pretty strange to me in that you don't see them going up and then coming back down. They don't come down vertically. They move horizontally through the sky, and when you see them appear, they appear just in the middle of the sky. So that's kind of weird, and when you see lights just magically appearing like that, that's a sign that something is a little out of the ordinary, could indicate a hoax, could indicate that something genuinely mysterious is happening. So there are things that indicate slightly different behavior than what we would expect from flares. However, the overall behavior suggests that is a decent possibility for an identification for these things. We don't know what the weather was like that day. We don't know if there was strong winds that could blow these things in a horizontal way. So it's an interesting video. I recommend people check it out. It's got a lot of people talking, a lot of different opinions going with this thing.
Right. Right. And yeah, they don't do anything really crazy. So to completely throw the flare thing out of the picture.
Right. And they're just the sheer volume. There's so many of these things that appear and they all move the same way. It's slowly drift horizontally through the sky and out of view, and then others appear and drift the same way.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, that the media has caught onto it so much, because it's almost like these days the media needs a UFO story every couple of weeks.
It's definitely something that gets them a lot of traffic, and you know, we talked about this many times. There's just this huge public interest in this topic. So you're right. I think a lot of times the mainstream media will look, and they'll say, you know what, we need a UFO story now. And then they go and find these random stories, and in the case of this one, a very old story, you know, from December 2012.
Right. Right. All right, great. Thanks, Jason.
You bet. So what's your story?
Want to hear
yes,
my story?
Yes, I do want to hear your story.
I'm going to go with yet again, and people are probably getting tired of it. Well, maybe not, because it's so popular, but they'll be done with it soon, I think, is the Sirius video.
Oh, yeah, people are definitely still interested in that.
Yeah, just because you can go to our site and you can watch it. Today's the release date, but they still show that it's not available to watch right now. I think that they're probably waiting until the premiere, which is at 7:30 p.m. tonight in Hollywood. So if the movie's a couple hours, that won't be till 9:30 p.m. East Coasters. That's going to be like after midnight, right? All right? So I don't know if East Coasters will be able to catch it today, but the rest of us will have to wait late also to be able to see it. But at some point today, they're going to release it, and we'll finally know the truth about Ada. And Ada, not ABBA, the band from the 70s, Ada is this little creature. They've named it. So that's one of the things that came out this week. They gave us what they call it, Ada. And then also the sex and the age. So they think it's male. They also think it's 6 to 8 years old. You know, it was birth. After birth, it's been walking around for 6 to 8 years, this little thing. However, this is all done by bone tests. And, you know, our argument is still out there. And the first analysis that came out, like we wrote about, was the that it was a fetus. And I think that it does look like a fetus, looking at the pictures that we even posted of the fetus skeleton. If you crush the skull, it looks very similar. So we'll see what happens. And, you know, we made a note that one scientist had come up with the analysis, the very first guy to look at it, that it was a fetus skeleton mummified. They supposedly have a person that says it is, you know, that an unknown creature that is 6 to 8 years old. But that's two different scientific opinions. So in this film, hopefully they have others, because you do need more opinions to prove something scientifically. And also, I think of note was that they haven't released the information on the people who have done the work on this thing yet because of safety concerns. But I'm not sure what they mean by that. They are going to release the names today on the film. So they obviously didn't think it was unsafe to do that today, but for some reason felt it was unsafe to do that prior. So that's a little mysterious. And then they do throw in there on the description of the film that Dr. Greer is afraid of assassination, even though this thing's been around for a while, as well as Dr. Greer. So some interesting things I think hopefully will all get answered in the film today.
I think a lot of people are hanging on to see what type of conclusions are going to be reached and what evidence is going to back that up.
Mm-hmm.
There's some pretty big claims, and as we know with not just UFOs but science in general, scientists don't always agree, and you have to have lots of tests done by lots of different scientists at different labs and have something that's reproducible, and that's where you get a lot of problems in the UFO field because, you know, in the case of a UFO sighting or something, a lot of these things aren't reproducible, so scientists can't go in and do that reproducible test and get that evidence to further substantiate something. But in this case, yeah, there are a lot of claims made, and I'm hoping they'll be scientific and professional and point out that their tests indicate this, but there are other explanations, possible explanations, to explain why some of these oddities exist. A lot of people have been attaching to the strangeness of fewer than normal ribs. Well, that's a condition that exists in just normal human child birth, lots of birth defects and things. And there have been recent studies showing that it's not an uncommon thing to have kids born or fetuses, growing babies, that have an abnormal number of ribs, either more than usual or fewer than usual. And also with bone density, there are conditions that exist that would cause the bone density to be off kilter, something called fetal skeletal dysplasia. That's one of the symptoms of that. You'll either have a child that has larger than normal or less than normal bone density. So if that's what the people from Sirius are using to determine the age, or what they have used to determine the age, if the bone density is less than it should be because of a medical condition, that would throw the age off. As well as we've seen a lot of things with skull sizes and deformities in the skull. There are conditions that cause that. And just a few weeks ago in the Huffington Post, there was a story about this child in India that had this huge alien-looking head. You know, there's so many birth defects that happen that could cause something to look strange, and a lot of people have criticized us for saying, well, you know, this creature does look very similar to a human fetus. They're all, oh, there's no way. I Googled and looked at human fetuses, and it doesn't look anything like that. Well, number one, you've got to look at skeletons of human fetuses. That's a big difference there. And number two, there's so many different stages of development and so many different things that can affect what something looks like. And as you pointed out, it does look very similar and almost identical to a lot of the fetuses we've seen at certain ages. So to me, I'm very excited to see the science behind this. That's going to be the big thing. And hopefully they're going to make this creature available to other people for additional testing to substantiate what they're claiming.
Yeah, I felt it looked similar. So we'll see what happens with the film today. I'm sure we'll probably write something tomorrow. I know others are writing things that'll be out tomorrow. At least I know Lee Spiegel is going to have something up. So we'll see what happens. I'm sure this will be a story at least for the next week.
Absolutely. And as you pointed out, I mean, the test that's already been done on this thing, the doctor was very confident that this thing is simply a fetus. So a lot of people are glossing over that there's already been testing done, and the doctor didn't just say, oh, it could be a fetus. No, he said pretty much without a doubt, this is a fetus. So.
Right. Exactly. I mean, he said beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah,
and
those were his words.
With his words, along with it looking like one, they've got their work ahead of them to prove that this thing is anything else. Especially to meet the claims that they made, which was it's going to change the way people see the world. And
right.
I mean, very hefty claims. So
yeah, but a lot of people are excited about it. We're excited about it because, again, up to this point, until we see it, all we can do is speculate about what they're going to say and how they're going to back it up. So I can't wait to see it.
Yep. All right. And so if you want to read more about the news, of course, you can go to openminds.tv. And you can also check out Spacing Out on our webpage or on our YouTube channel. And this week, Maureen's back.
Hooray.
Yep, she's been gone for a little while, so that'll be great. All right, so anything else, Jason?
That's it for me, Alejandro.
All right, thank you, sir. Let's go ahead and talk to Ryan Sprague. Well, I am happy to welcome our esteemed Open Minds writer, and then some, Ryan Sprague. Hello, Ryan. So how you doing?
Not too bad. Kind of a gloomy day here in New York City, gray overcast, but the temperatures are raising, which I'm sure you guys are experiencing there in Arizona.
Yeah, definitely. So, but we don't want them to raise too much more here.
Right, right.
So we're hitting about 90, you know, 80s or real low 90s. It's perfect, and but it'll go over the top pretty soon.
Yeah, I'd be happy to take at least 10 of those degrees from you.
Well, you're always welcome to come out and hang out. So let's get into this. Is going to be a New York story because you got lots of cool New York stuff. You got your play going on. You know, we're going to talk about your latest story in Open Minds magazine. Mm-hmm. But let's start off with. What got you interested in this topic?
Great question. I never really had that sort of quintessential sighting, Alejandro, that many researchers or people interested in this topic have had. I happened to trip into the library one day. I was sort of a bookworm as a kid, along with playing sports and everything. And I made my way into that section, the unknown, the metaphysics, you know, whatever the library of your choice decides to call it. And I found a book by Stanton Friedman. It was Crash at Corona. And the cover of the book is what caught my attention first. This craft that unlike anything I had ever seen as a child or seen in textbooks or any airplanes that I'd seen in pictures. And it intrigued me. I started scanning the book, and when I was reading that these things were craft of perhaps unknown origin or from other planets, it scared me to death and intrigued me that these things were not only flying over our skies, but that they were also crashing, and no one was really doing anything about it. So that's what sort of got me hooked. I started taking out book after book after book on the topic. Everything from sightings to abductions to everything in between. And to be honest, I've yet to return that Crash at Corona book to the library. It's still sitting in my library here at home.
It's funny because I just saw the Library Cop episode of Seinfeld last night.
Right, that's what I always come after you. Yep, I always refer people to that when I tell them that little tidbit.
That's funny.
So, yeah, the X-Files had a lot to do with my upbringing. You know, when that exploded into pop culture, it sort of made the topic cool for a little while. And my dream was to be the next Fox Mulder, you know, just like every other kid. Mm-hmm. Or I'd like to think every other kid.
So then you're one of the people who came to us and said you wanted to write. And, of course, like we tell everybody, you know, send us something and we'll see how it goes. And then you mm-hmm. become a regular writer. How did you, what inspired you to do that, to write, and did you try other outlets and we were the first to give you a chance, or were we your first shot?
You were the only ones to bite. No, it's interesting, Alejandro. I actually had a friend of mine recommend your original inception of your radio show to me. He said, listen, I listened to this radio show the other day, and I think it's something you might be really interested in. I hadn't talked to the guy in a few years, and this is the first thing he said to me. So I looked you up, and I heard your radio show, and I was impressed with the topics you were covering and the vast knowledge you had as a researcher. And I started sort of seeking you guys out. You were just starting Open Minds at the time. And I had always been a writer. I wrote short stories. I wrote comic books as a kid. And I was really trying to find an outlet where I could talk about the UFO topic in a serious matter. You know, that whole ridicule factor that goes with it. It wasn't really something I could talk about with friends or family. They would just shrug it off and laugh at me. But I contacted you and asked if I could perhaps send you something, and just like you said, you guys gave me a chance, and I wrote an article about two military officers who had UFO sightings, one of them being a relative of mine who was in the Air Force, and it was his first time coming forward about his sighting in the Open Minds article, and that it sort of went from there. You guys invited me back to try another article pertaining to the Rendlesham Forest incident, and the rest is history. I think I'm about 10 articles in with you guys now, and I could not be more thankful for that and proud of the stuff you guys do and letting me be a part of that.
Well, cool, and this is a good segue, and I wasn't doing that as a plug for the show because I wasn't, you know, sure about all of that. That's really cool to hear, though.
It really is. Yeah, you guys are the reason for my reaffirmation into the world of UFOs, for sure.
Uh-huh. Cool. Well, speaking of Rendlesham, then, getting into a play. I mean, tell me a little bit about how you got into playwriting and what you do in that area.
Sure. Like I said, always wrote as a kid, Alejandro, but it wasn't until I reached college that I really got interested in the world of theater. I was in high school playing baseball, and our baseball coach made the entire baseball team try out for the musical that year, which was Damn Yankees, the very classic musical. And I ended up getting cast in the show, and I caught the acting bug. Went to college, started studying theater a little more, and halfway through my college career, I took a playwriting class to try to get a sense of who was writing these plays that I was ultimately acting in. And I was astounded yet again. I found a way to mix passions of writing and theater, and it sort of took off from there. I've got about 10, maybe 12 plays under my belt right now, everything ranging from 10-minute plays up until 2-hour-long plays, and even wrote the book to one musical. So that's sort of my history with theater, and I recently started mixing that passion with the world of UFOs, and that's mm-hmm. where the idea for Rendlesham came from.
Now, before we get into Rendlesham, so have these plays that you've written, have they all kind of been produced? Have they made it to the stage?
Most of them have, Alejandro.
I
feel very fortunate to say that. Not many playwrights can say that, but I have a lot of support with my writing, both family, friends, and colleagues. Mm-hmm. there's new theater companies here in New York City sprouting up left and right. You know, it's challenging to get work here doing anything with the arts, and you sort of have to make your own work. So I've had a lot of young, ambitious theater people express a lot of interest in my plays, and Rendlesham is another one that I have a lot of hope for and has already garnished a lot of attention, and I haven't even written the entire script yet.
That's funny. Well, that is really cool. So
yeah.
It's great because we're getting to you before you're too famous to talk to us.
Never. I would never do that to you guys.
Nice. Because it's a sure thing that you're going to make it big time, I think.
Oh, totally.
So sweet. So then you decided. Now, when you wrote your story for Rendlesham, mm-hmm. Was this your first? Did you know much about that case prior?
I did not. I heard one interview about it with one of the officers involved, John Burroughs, and I couldn't believe that I had never heard of it. And a lot of people here in the United States hadn't. It happened over in England in the 1980s, and it was covered up for a really long time, sort of like Roswell was for a really long time until the lid was sort of blown off that, and it became possibly the most famous case of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I had no previous knowledge of the case before hearing that interview, but then I ended up picking up a book by UFO researcher Peter Robbins, who co-wrote a book with Larry Warren, who was another officer involved with the Rendlesham Forest incident. And I read the book once, I read it again, and it was just amazing, the story that this guy was telling. And I decided I wanted to write an article about it, and it just so happened to be the next issue that you guys were publishing was about UFO landings. It was serendipitous at best.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was great is we wrote a lot about Rendlesham. I think all of us took a piece of the story, but we were really happy because you volunteered to take the most controversial aspect. And, you know, we weren't excited about tiptoeing around that, and we were excited that someone else would do it.
It is. It's a very controversial case in whole. It took place over 3 nights, and in fact, Alejandro, it took them almost 30 years to delineate that it took place over 3 separate nights, so that's mm-hmm. controversial in itself. But you're right, the third night of events, which is what I covered in your magazine and also in the play I'm writing, is probably the most controversial night for many reasons, which is a story in itself. But
mm-hmm. Well, maybe I would go ahead and get into that, get into what is claimed to have happened on the third night, how this came about, that the public knew about it, or that Peter, you know, put together the book and everything, and why it's controversial.
Sure. Like I said, it happened over 3 nights. The first 2 nights of events, Alejandro, there were strange lights being seen in the forest there in Suffolk, England, and they were getting reported by the flight tower operators and by officers on the ground, some civilians, and on the second night, there was a structured craft that was said to have landed in the forest, which was the night that some of your listeners may know that John Burroughs and Jim Peniston were involved, which were covered in the issue of Open Minds as well. But on the third night, another structured craft was said to have been seen in the forest, and that was told by Larry Warren, who was an officer involved on the third night. He claims that he was taken off his post during his guard duty and brought to a privately owned field in Rendlesham Forest called Capel Green. And he claims that there were over 40 other officers in the field with him who witnessed this craft appear out of nowhere. These strange lights came in from the coast. There was a big explosion of light, and the structured craft appeared. And lo and behold, Larry also claims that he saw beings coming out of this craft that somewhat interacted with other officers there. Other officers have corroborated Larry's story on seeing the same thing as him that night. I think the most controversial part of all of it, Alejandro, on the third night, was the witnessing of these beings. a lot of people will believe that strange lights are being seen in the skies, but when it comes to flesh and blood beings appearing, this is something completely different. And I think that is why it was the most controversial night. And also, Larry was one of few officers to come forward about what he had seen. He ultimately was the whistleblower on the entire Rendlesham case, and it was because of him that this all came forward, whereas the U.S. government was completely fine with it being covered up for as long as possible. So I think that's where a lot of the controversy stems from, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you able to speak with, as part of, I think you have over time, with Jim Peniston, John Burroughs, and Charles Halt, some of the other witnesses?
Mm-hmm. I have spoken briefly with both Jim Peniston and John Burroughs through a mutual colleague of mine, and I would say ours, Mr. Nick Pope, the researcher who worked for the Ministry of Defense. But the story I'm trying to tell with my play, Alejandro, is Larry Warren's story. It's about he and Peter Robbins writing their book entitled Left at East Gate, which was an account of Larry's third night of events. So a lot of my conversation has taken place with Larry over in Liverpool, England, and Peter here in the upstate New York area. As for the other officers, they are currently working on their own project having to do with their night of events. So I've spoken to them briefly, but a lot of what I focus on has to do with Larry Warren, again, one of the key players in the case and ultimately one of the most controversial, which makes for a great play.
Right, which is great. And I think it is smart to focus on one aspect because there are so many, I guess, It's easier to do that. Plus, I would say at this point, there's a lot of skepticism around the Larry Warren Third Night story. Mm-hmm. So it's not as well known, but of course it's more theatrical too because much more happened.
Right, right. A lot happened, especially afterwards, Alejandro. That's what I try to tell people when they ask me, you know, how are you going to have all these flying saucers appear in your play and a forest and all that. And I keep telling them it's a human story. It's about Larry and his involvement and the aftermath of it. He was honorably discharged from the military afterwards. The events had a great effect on him mentally, and he no longer wanted to work for a government that was ultimately hiding one of the biggest secrets in U.S. history. Mm-hmm. He went on to blow the whistle on the topic, having very little threat. You know, he didn't have a pension. He was no longer with the Air Force, so he really didn't seem like he had anything to lose. And then he approached Peter Robbins to write the book, and that's where the meat of the play really starts, is the teaming up of these two men to research the case and the pitfalls, the relationships that were built, the relationships that deteriorated throughout the years. It took them 10 years to write the book about Rendlesham, and that's the story I'm trying to tell.
Mm-hmm. Now, out of curiosity from your point of view, now I've met Larry. He's a great guy. Of course, I've known Peter for years. Love the heck out of that guy. He's been on the show a couple times.
Yes.
But with this aspect of the story, over time, a lot of people have a hard time with it. And, you know, like I said, it is the one that people are most skeptical about. Do you think that they haven't got a fair shake for you? Like, if you were to argue that this is an important aspect and people should pay attention to it, what would your argument be?
I think this could very well be the case that blows the lid off the entire UFO topic, Alejandro. I honestly do. We have a lot of things happening currently. You have the citizens hearing fastly approaching. You have this new documentary coming out by Dr. Stephen Greer, and it seems like the mass media is starting to really tap into this subject. And dare I say, even take it a bit more seriously. There will always be that ridicule factor, obviously. it's the way the mass media covers its own hides. But I do think that if the Rendlesham case ever came forward with everyone involved telling the same story and approaching Congress about it, I think it could very well be the case that tells them, we're not going to shut up. We saw what we saw out there, and the truth needs to be told.
Right. And
yeah,
I guess that in that, I don't know how to frame it, I guess. No, I guess that answers it. So let's move on.
Sure.
So New York, ufology in New York. I'd like to ask you about this because people have said it's kind of struggled. Of course, you had, you know, Whitley Strieber is in upstate New York where his events happened. You have some ufologists out there. Lee Spiegel, our good friend from the Huffington Post, is out there. Of course, Bud Hopkins work out of there. But I've always heard, and you know, Antonio, who works here, used to live out there, and they've always had a hard time kind of coalescing an organization or getting groups together to kind of meet and stuff like that. Have you seen that to be the case? What is the state of UFO research out there?
That is a good point. I actually spoke to Antonio about this at the UFO Congress recently, of the sort of the scattered people here on the East Coast, more specifically in New York City, who are interested in this topic. You have some of the more big name people such as Bud Hopkins and Whitley Strieber. But there are many of us here who are very interested in the topic. Getting an organization started is a challenge. It's hard to even meet for coffee with someone for 5 minutes when you're living here.
And why is that? Just because 5 minutes is too much time? Everybody's too busy, or
it's crazy, Alejandro. I grew up in a small town in upstate New York, and where time is on your side. But when you're living here in New York, you know, it's cliche. It's the hustle and bustle. It's, you know, every day is a challenge, but it really is to get from one place to another here. You're sticking your neck out every time, and it's sad in a way, but it's also very exciting. It's just constantly on the move. There's days where I can't believe that it's already time for dinner, and I feel like I had just woken up. To get someone to sit down and actually think about the UFO topic is hard. Everyone sort of is in their own world here. For as many people live here in New York and the amount of people here, it's a very lonely city. And to find people to connect with on a topic so, you know, profound as this, it's tough. It's tough. I give Bud Hopkins all the credit in the world for basing his Intruders Foundation organization out of New York. It's amazing. And if we could get a solid organization out here to investigate UFOs, I think that would be a big step for sure with the amount of media we have.
That makes sense, you know, because people are always asking, you know, I lived in Colorado. I've worked with MUFON doing their conferences and, of course, our Congress. And we're always out here in the Southwest or the Western states, and people are always like, come out east, or, and especially go to New York. And it's just historically people have had a hard time there. But given what you've just told me, you know, that kind of puts it in perspective and makes a little more sense.
It does. It's also very expensive, Alejandro. Mm-hmm. I'm sure people have heard the horror stories of what rent costs to live here in New York, and I can attest to that. I have three jobs here just to live in a closet, and that's just the way it is. You sort of just have to roll with it.
Right. Eek.
Yeah.
Speaking of Speaking of New York stories, I want to talk about, you know, your latest article in Open Minds and the current issue that everybody has to go pick up. And I can't stress this enough, and I don't do this enough on the radio show, is talk about the magazine. Because the magazine's really important. I mean, you know, even just today looking at it, our graphic designers do such an incredible job. And, like, the way they laid out your story is just absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, yes, and, they are unbelievable, Alejandro. I would love to shake the hand of your graphic artist someday. It just brings a whole new level to the quality of not only the material you guys are covering with your contributors and your staff writers, but it just it's so vibrant. I saw the magazine in the front section at a Barnes & Noble the other day here in New York, and you know, it catches the eye for sure, and then people start reading it, and it's unbelievable the work you guys do with the magazine. And I think it does need a bit more a more push by you and the people there at Open Minds. You guys put so much into it, and people are responding so positively to it. I had a gentleman tell me the other day that out in North Carolina that he went to buy the magazine at Barnes & Noble, and they told him it was all sold out, which is amazing. I love the work you guys do. I'm not only a writer for the magazine, but I'm one of your biggest fans for sure. And
Well, thank you. Thanks. Wow, I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting to do the pitch, but you did a better job than I did.
I did my job.
Yeah, good job. And it's just, you know, I think I've got a lot of UFO books. I'm sure you do. But even one of these publications, because it looks so good and they're so nice that, you know, paying, it's less than $10. It's usually like $7 to get one or something like that. But I'd pay $10 to have, or more, to have this thing, and it's something that you can have forever and to reference these great stories.
Yeah, I agree. Since the beginning, the quality that you guys have put out is amazing. And I think that's what draws people to your website and the radio show and the magazine, is how serious you guys take this and showing that, you know, we can be right next to National Geographic on the magazine shelves, and just as many people will read it.
Well, and the reason I say that is just I just love the Last Light magazine because it looks so great, and the way they laid out your story is so nice and everything. And I want to talk about the story because, of course, it's an interesting one, and it's probably one of the biggest and most interesting cases out there in New York. So give me a little snapshot of the story you wrote.
Sure. What I decided to cover in this article, Alejandro, was the Brooklyn Bridge UFO abduction. Very famous case, which dealt with Bud Hopkins, the famous UFO abduction researcher. This took place, I believe it was, the year is escaping me, which is sacrilegious, considering I wrote the article.
Well, it's hard to keep all these facts and figures in your head. In fact, I always have to keep notes or refer back to my articles when stuff like this.
I'm trying to here we
1989.
Go. There we go. I just found it. Thank you. I'm looking at the magazine as we speak.
Me too.
Which is quite beautiful, by the way. Yes, 1989 was the year that this all took place. Bud was working with several abductees, and one of them was a woman by the name of Linda Cortile, who was later gave her real name, which was Linda Napolitano. She came to Bud and said that she had been having some incidents happen to her, and she was looking for answers, and Bud started looking deeper and deeper into her case. And then she came to him with a story that was unlike anything he'd really seen up until that point. She claimed that she was taken out of her bed in her New York City apartment. She was floated out of a solid window and brought up into a craft. And the sort of, not cliche, but the abduction scenario that we all know about, where they are aboard the ship and they feel paralyzed and they're experimented on, and then they're brought back and there's a sense of missing time occurring. This all happened to Linda. What made the case even that more interesting, though, Alejandro, was that there were actual witnesses to this event. Bud was contacted via the U.S. Postal Service. He received a letter from two supposed police officers who claimed to have witnessed this woman being floated out of her apartment, brought up into a craft, and the craft took off. And this is what made the case, I think, the most controversial case at the time, was that there were actual witnesses involved in this.
Right.
So, yeah, that's sort of the backstory to the Brooklyn Bridge UFO abduction.
And it's where you have a situation where that happens, interesting enough.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, this story sort of went from there. Bud started doing some research into these men who had been the witnesses and found out that they were not police officers. They were actually guards who were on guard detail that night, escorting a member of the United Nations. And lo and behold, there's your third witness, was a actual member of the United Nations, which again is hard to believe, but this is all come forward by these men and was researched by Bud extensively. And he wrote a book about it called Witnessed. And it was perhaps one of the most famous cases Bud researched, for sure.
And Bud had interviewed this guy, the UN member, and this guy had confirmed everything, right?
He did, which is very interesting. You know, one would think that he would not want to be involved with the UFO topic, but he did. He confirmed everything that these two men said they had seen, and he had seen the same thing. He did not want his name given at the time, but many researchers have concluded the name of the individual, who I actually have right here, was Javier Perez, who was a fifth Secretary General of the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. You have an actual name to put to the face, which mm-hmm. only makes the case that more credible.
Right. Now, I know you touched on this in the story, that people had accused her of mirroring her story after this fiction book called Night Eyes. Had you been able to look at that book at all?
I haven't, Alejandro. When I heard about that stint in the case, I was very, very adamant about wanting to read that before I wrote the article. I just could not get my hands on it before the deadline. But I would be very interested to read the book. Apparently the similarities are quite astounding, which does lead one to believe that perhaps this woman either fabricated the entire thing or took events from the book to coincide with her own abduction story.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that with some of these abductees, they have one experience and then they feel like they constantly have to top themselves for their quote unquote fan base. It's sad that it has to be that way, but there are times when you can't blame them. They sort of become the face of the topic, and to keep it alive and keep it going, they may sometimes exaggerate things. Now, I'm not to say any particular people are doing that, or even that Linda did this, but a lot of people have said that the similarities between her story and that of this fictional book are striking, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be interesting. In fact, if any listeners have read that book, let us know. And in fact, I know we got a long kind of a rebuttal to your story that we'll be posting in our Open Minds mail, where a researcher talks about kind of his thoughts, because he was actually around during that time and got to know all these people. So
very interesting. I would love to hear that, for sure.
Yeah, that'll be really cool to see.
Mm-hmm.
It's always mm-hmm. fun to get different perspectives.
It is. Yes, that's what keeps these things going. You know, we can't take one person's word for it. You know, and I took a very objective stance with the article. I don't claim to believe it or not believe it. Again, it's, It's just getting the word out there about the case and keeping it alive. It's a very famous case and some of the best work Bud Hopkins has ever done.
Right. And I think that, you know, which is an important thing. I mean, a lot of people feel uncomfortable with saying, I don't know. But I think in this field, you have to, because I'm the same way in that when I write about a lot of this stuff, I don't necessarily come up with an opinion. Because
right.
It's hard to. And you know, we're not necessarily any sort of authorities, even though we know a lot.
Right.
And we've done a lot in this field doesn't mean that we have – can make anybody's mind up or know for sure what's happened or not. So
exactly. There's no degree in ufology, unfortunately. Not yet. Not yet.
And even if there was, that doesn't, you know, make it so that I can, you know, decide anybody's mind for them. So
right.
Just some of these things are just mysteries, and that's okay. It's okay not to know.
Oh, of course. I mean, I think that's what keeps me going is the intrigue and the just the sheer magnitude of if we ever did learn the complete truth behind this, how it could ultimately change the world. But I've always said that, you know, it's the journey that matters. And I think that's why a lot of people get involved with this topic. It's intriguing. It's a mystery. And it's ultimately the greatest puzzle that we could try to piece together is there life elsewhere in the universe. And it keeps me going, Alejandro. Keeps my mind running all night.
You know, another thing that I want to ask you about is just because you're younger, you're like 18, 15? Just kidding.
I wish I could go back to those innocent days.
Yeah, be nice.
Yeah, I'm 28.
Right, so you're under 30, which is good. What were we teasing? Oh, we were talking about HuffPost Live, and I still need to tease Lee about this, how there's nobody over 30 on that show, which is certainly different than other news stations. But my
right.
point being that a lot of people are always talking about youth. How do we get the youth involved? How do we get the younger people involved? Because when you go to these conferences and things, you know, you certainly – the mean age at a conference is somewhere around 75,
yeah,
probably.
You're probably about smack dab on the
right
there.
So do you think they do get involved just in different ways or – because the interest
mm-hmm.
seems to be there. What are your thoughts that way?
That is a great question. I think the interest is there, Alejandra. I think it's a challenge for the younger generation to find a way to express their beliefs in it. You know, you take, for instance, the wonderful work you guys did at the Congress. I saw teenagers there. I saw families there. And I think it's things like that that will get the youth involved. Many of the volunteers you guys had working there were my age, if not younger. And the interest is definitely there. I just don't think they know where to turn. You have billions of websites online boasting that that this civilization is visiting the planet, that civilization is visiting the planet. This is the messenger for them. It's hard to know where to start. Like I said, no one welcomed me into the field with open arms when I started researching it. My interest started with a book on Roswell and went from there. I think the youth have to be careful where they're getting their information from. Like I said, they are the age of social networking and the internet. I made it on the tail end of that, and that's ultimately how I got connected with you and with Peter Robbins and with many of the researchers I'm currently working with. And I think the world of social networking is a great way for the youth to get involved. You have many groups online over Facebook popping up left and right, you know, to get people involved, get them talking about it. And I think that's the future of it. It's no longer these conferences with stuffy lectures. It's these great events that people like you put on, and it's the work of the media, not the mass media. Let me be clear on that. you know, you guys have a web series, you have a radio show, you have a magazine. You're hitting every outlet you can to get this topic out there in an exciting and informative way. And I think that's what will draw the youth into it for sure.
Mm-hmm. So keep doing what we're doing is what you're saying.
I'm saying keep doing what you guys are doing and hope that other people will follow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys are sort of a pioneering company in that way that you ultimately are the face of ufology when it comes to distributing the quality to the public. Like I said, there's so much out there and it's so saturated. Where do you begin? And I think what you guys are doing is good, and I could not be happier to be involved with that.
See, and I need to make this qualification again that I did not know that you were going to be saying all of this nice stuff. You're not
right,
being paid to say this stuff.
Let's forewarn your listeners. I was not endorsed by Open Minds for this.
But it's really nice. I would like to interview more fans of ours to solicit this sort of conversation.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the first website I go to every morning, Alejandro, is Open Minds. I got my coffee, and then I'm off to work. you guys are on top of everything. You have your finger on the pulse, and that's what's most important. It's keeping the field moving forward. Yes, Roswell is important. Yes, Rendlesham is important. But when it comes
down... Oh, are you okay?
Oh, I'm fine. There's some construction going on in my building.
Sounded
like something hit the floor. It's about moving the field forward. And like I said, those cases are important, but we need some forward momentum. And I think that's where the youth of today are really going to help.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you're right, because that is a hard thing is, you know, with a website or with a magazine, we don't have demographics necessarily on that sort of thing. We do with the conference because, well, we can eyeball it. But it is harder to understand how much of the youth is out there and getting involved. But it does seem like we do have more youth involved than, let's say, MUFON or some of the other organizations. And hopefully we can turn them on to all of this stuff going on and they can go into the directions that they feel they want to look into.
I agree. There's so many, you know, sort of side projects when it comes to the UFO topic. You know, there's abductions, there's sightings, there's the military aspect, there's black budgets. I could go on and on and on. And it's what really interests you the most and what you think is most important. And to me, it's not so much disclosure. I think this is a very hot word that we use in the UFO field. I think it's getting everyone on the same level in trying to find answers. You know, the government isn't going to come forward and tell us that they've been lying to us for 50 years. It's just not going to happen. So it's about doing our own research, bringing it to the government and saying, look, we know something's going on. We will accept it. Please tell us, you know, and hopefully that'll happen someday, hopefully within our lifetime. I have hope.
It's interesting you say that, too, your last statement, because it's something that I agree with, and it's something in this field that motivates me is to move on and to who cares what the government's doing? Who cares really what any other media is doing? I mean, I care. We care, and we cover it.
Right.
But
right.
We can't wait for them to do this stuff for us. We have to do it on our own. And I feel that that is kind of a generation gap in the perspective where a lot of the older groups are going to Washington and saying, you guys need to do this and you guys need to do that. You have to tell us this and that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the younger generation, maybe it's even cynicism, is kind of like, well, who cares what they're going to do? They're going to do goofball, crazy stuff we don't care about anyways. It's more about what we're doing and what we're telling each other and what we're making for ourselves.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more.
Cool. That was easy. So for you, when do you think your Rendlesham play is going to come out?
Oh, good question. I'd say about 85% done with the first draft, Alejandro. You know, the research that's going into this thing is excruciating in a good way. I'm telling a true account, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I have to take liberties with dialogue. I wasn't there. I don't know exactly what Peter said or what Colonel Halt said or what Larry said, but creating these characters has been challenging. Basing them on actual people is even more challenging. But yeah, I'm telling this story as true as and accurate as possible. So I would say probably by the tail end of 2014, I will have a fully structured play good to go. Like I said, I already have interest in the play by companies here in New York.
Great.
And some abroad as well. If I could premiere this play in Britain, even near Rendlesham, that would be a dream come true. So yeah, I think we're shooting for a 2014 opening of Rendlesham and a 2015 opening on Broadway.
Really? And I mean, you're laughing as if, do you mean that will really happen or that's your goal and it's a long shot?
That is a goal for sure. To get a UFO play on Broadway would be amazing. Get a multi-million dollar budget. Then I could have these
crafts
landing on the stage. But But yeah, I could see this thing working really well as sort of a underground, off Broadway show. That seems to be the way Peter thinks it's going to go. I am working with Peter Robbins. I forgot to mention that, Alejandro, very closely on the play. We meet here in New York at least once a month to sit down and really get to the meat of the story. He has been extremely gracious and has given me access to audio tapes from his research with Larry, conversations with Colonel Charles Halt. And these things will be verbatim in the play. I will be using actual conversations between these men in the play. So yeah, it's been a challenge. I'm ready for it. I'm ready for the good, the bad, the ugly. And I just want to get it out there in a medium that's never really seen it, Alejandro. The only other play I could think about UFOs was about Roswell, written by a playwright named Marty Martin. And great, great play. It premiered in Roswell a few years back. And the only other play I can think of was written by myself about Travis Walton in the Fire in the Sky incident. It's never seen the light of day, probably never will. I did speak to Travis about it at the Congress, and he hopes I'll revisit it someday for sure. He's a big advocate of the arts, just like Peter Robbins. And if I could be the voice of UFOs in the world of theater, I would die a happy man.
That is so awesome. Well, now is my chance to say a lot of nice stuff about you. So thank you so much for coming on the show. We have been, since the beginning, so happy that you're writing for Open Minds and a part of the group. What you're doing out there is just so ridiculously exciting. No doubt that we definitely live a bit vicariously through you because all of the work, you know, into the arts and everything as well. So it's all very, very exciting. So thanks so much for being part of Open Minds, and thanks so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure, Alejandro. You guys are like family, and yes, you will be the first to get tickets to the show when it opens, for sure.
Awesome, and I will be there.
Great. Such a pleasure, Alejandro.
You too. Thanks, man.
Take care. Oh, one more thing, Alejandro. Do you mind if I lead the people to the masses to the Rendlesham Facebook page?
No, that would be awesome. Perfect. That way they can, I'm assuming you're going to put updates there so people will be able to follow along with the progress of the play is.
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome.
So they'll know when it opens and stuff. Just a little shameless plug. It's facebook.com/Rendlesham Play. That's it.
All right. Perfect. Yeah. That's what this is all for. Do you have any more plugs?
No, I will leave it at that.
Okay, that's fine. Great. Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks again for being on the show, and we'll be talking to you soon.
My pleasure, Alejandro. Take care, buddy.
All right. Thank you, Ryan. Didn't I tell you he was a cool guy? Super cool guy. You can check out his stories in our magazine. In fact, if you go to your local bookstore, you'll probably find on the shelf our latest April-May issue. And on the front cover, you'll see the story, the Brooklyn Bridge UFO abduction. And that's his story. He got the cover story. And you'll be able to read more about that. Also, do check out his Facebook page for the Rendlesham Play to get the latest on what's going on there. And I'm sure we'll give you more information as things go along as well. So thank you all very much for listening. Join us next week. And I do want to say thank you to the people who have made our excellent open and close music. Caleb Hanks did the opening, and then 2 Earth Minutes has done the close. So thank you again for listening to Open Mind UFO Radio, and we will talk to you next week, people.